You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 358 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Detective Comics 1076, Batman, Catwoman, The Gotham War, Scorched Earth number 1, Supergirl Special number 1, and Doom Patrol Season 4 Episode 12, Dun Patrol. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, Cletus, first up for DC news, Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths animated trilogy gets its first trailer. It will be released in 3 movies over the course of 2024.
Not a long teaser, but definitely enough to give you a feel for it. Looks like a pretty, from the little clips that we saw, Drew, it looks like it's following relatively close to the story, and I'm pretty excited for that. I love the animated movies that they do for the most part. Obviously, some are remiss, but more often than not, they're really good. And this is obviously such a monumental DC story. I would love to see it done well. My hope, Drew, is that they choose to just follow it pretty closely. I don't need them to give a twist ending to it, to be like, oh, well, it's different. Surprise, comic readers. Because almost every time that they do that, it's worse than the story that was written in the first place. Like, just do that story. I'm okay knowing the ending. I'm not going into this expecting to be surprised.
I totally agree with you on that. So, I don't want any sort of twist ending either. Just tell the story. It's a classic story. We know it. You know, this is what we're expecting. It'll be cool to see it animated. When I watched the trailer, that was the first thing I thought, too, was like, wow, this looks like it's following the story exactly, for the most part. So, I was happy about that.
Yeah. And again, I don't need like a verbatim adaptation or anything, but a close adaptation. It's a famous popular story for a reason. Just do that story. You don't need to put your own twist. Obviously, you know, you can tell it in your own style and you can, you know, probably skip certain plot points. That's fine. But like hit the, you know, as long as we're hitting all of the major beats, it's going to be a good experience. I don't need the anti-monitor to secretly be Hush.
All right, well, let's move on to our last bit of DC news. James Gunn drops a surprise update on Peacemaker Season 2, confirming that he is currently working on writing it.
What an update. Thanks, James.
Oh, at least he's working on it.
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't even blame the guy if he wasn't. Like, I'm okay if he's focused on Superman. It's not a bad update by any means, but also, like, you know, yeah. I'm aware you're writing it, dude.
All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
As the temperatures get cooler, let's think back to a time where monsters fascinated our young minds, where haunted houses and flying saucers were the stuff of fantastical dreams. Come relive those wonderful times with us every Monday at 5 p.m. It's Monster Attack on the ESO Network.
Hey, Leah.
Hey, Sean.
You know what now's a good time for?
What's that?
A promo for the Soul Forge podcast.
The Soul Forge? What's that?
Oh, it's a show. It's a podcast. All about sex and dating.
Love and relationships.
Pop culture and movie reviews.
Adventure.
Almost anything you can think of.
Definitely.
What is it?
The Soul Forge.
The Soul Forge podcast.
Think about it.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 Spoilers,
we've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you. We got spoilers,
spoilers spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Detective Comics 1076. The old Arkham ruins, the cells. Batman is being held prisoner. Arzen informs Batman that in a few hours he will be walked to his execution. Arzen knows who Batman is under the mask. In another life, they might have been friends, but greatness requires sacrifice. Batman tells Arzen that his father was betrayed. He was made to choose between saving and sacrifice, but not the way Arzen thinks. As Arzen has suspected, his connection is built on lies. Arzen is amazed that Batman can speak with the asthma inside of him. Batman repeats, "You have known, Arzen." Arzen tells Bruce goodbye. He has done all he can for him. The Trixie Hotel, Gotham, 3 nights ago. Catwoman returns home and finds a ninja trying to break into her apartment. The ninja informs Catwoman that Batman is being held in a cell underneath the ruins of Old Arkham. His mind is being torn to bits by the asthma demon that is tethered to him. In 3 days, he will be walked to the gallows and hung. The ninja also informs Catwoman that he works for the Orgam Inner Circle. His loyalty to the Orgam cause is not in question. He's not doing this for Batman. He is doing this for the man behind the mask. Catwoman has 3 days to rescue Batman. She decides to put together a crew. First, she goes to Jim Gordon. Jim goes to Commissioner Montoya, who states her hands are tied. Jim just wants a heads up. Catwoman goes to Poison Ivy's shack in Slaughter Swamp, looking for a plan. To be continued. We also had some backup stories in this. First one is The Question in The Scream. A woman suspects her husband of abducting people. She brings Commissioner Montoya a hard drive full of people screaming. The husband states that the audio is ripped from horror movies. It's sick, but not illegal. The police scope the neighborhood, and it's all quiet. The buildings are old with paper-thin walls. There is no way anyone's screaming without it being heard and reported. Without any proof, the husband is going to be let go. Montoya decides some questions need to be answered. The questions follow Connor Tartar to Cherry Hills Elementary. Underneath the school is a room that had been forgotten and is cluttered with junk. This is where he's been keeping his victims. Connor pulls a gun on the question. Acting quickly, she takes him out with a Rubik's Cube. The question realizes that Connor has been taking his victims to this spot during recess. The noise of the kids drown out the screams. The question locks Connor up for the police to find in the morning. Our next story is called Azrael in the Sword of Batman. The Lord has guided Azrael back to Gotham because the city has been altered. The system has guided his hands to build a machine that will force the world back the way it used to be. The machine does not work. For the first time in a long time, Azrael has allies. Father Valley and Vengeance, the daughter of Bane. They are seeking Venom. The drug dealers that they come upon are full of asthma. Azrael shows up and dispatches these demons. Vengeance is able to obtain the Venom she is addicted to. When Azrael returns back home, the system takes over again. This time, the system builds the Azrael Batman suit. Our last story is called The Sumner's Lament. A Sumner has been waiting years to use Batman's death to open a doorway. It was either last week or the week before. We had just done a review of Detective Comics.
I'm pretty sure it was last week.
Yeah. So I think this was a special issue because we had several backups in it. So it was a little longer than they normally are.
Yeah, and conversely, the main story was a little bit shorter, too. I enjoyed the little mini time skip, though, implying that it had been a couple days since we had seen Batman be captured. I like the idea of this demon, this drug, whatever, eating at Batman's brain slowly, and the either literal or metaphor of Barbados kind of blocking, saving the last vestige of Bruce's mind. It was really interesting, Drew. There wasn't a ton to sink your teeth into, but what was there was really good. We got Catwoman setting up a rescue to steal Batman. I love that. Orgum being... Drew, do you think he's the one who went to see Catwoman? Because I think it's actually him. I don't think it's an underling.
Yeah, that's exactly who I thought it was. I mean, we saw it kind of foreshadowed in the previous issue where he had talked about wanting to save Bruce Wayne. I think that was him, and I think he was the one that was in the inner circle. I mean, you can't get more inner circle than him. So, yeah, I thought it was him. The other thing about this issue, I didn't have him in my recap because we had this short scene with Azrael in it, but it didn't really seem to pertain to the story. I thought that was weird. And then we had the backup with him in it.
And that seemed to imply he was getting the old bat suit out, so that could be interesting.
Yeah, so... And
I did like that the preacher, I can't think, Father or something?
Father Valley.
Thank you, Father Valley. That was, I was like, ooh, because I really liked his character. Was it Catwoman that he was in?
I'm pretty sure it was Catwoman he was in. Yeah. He was a Catwoman villain for a story. Well, it was more than just a story arc, because they'd kind of drawn him out for a bit. So we hadn't seen him since then. Vengeance, the Daughter of Bane, I could have done without.
But it made, I don't know, the trio made sense to me, Drew, when they all were together. I was like, this is an interesting trio that kind of, I don't know, Drew, it kind of worked. Like, I don't like Vengeance necessarily on her own, but if you're going to do her, I thought that that trio made sense.
Yeah, I guess you're right, it does make sense.
All of the backups intrigued me, Drew, that we got. I loved the question backup. That was exactly the kind of question story that I want to read, Drew, where there was a simple street-level mystery. She solves the mystery. You know, it's certainly an ugly crime befitting the question, I think.
The thing I loved about the question story is it felt like it was a true crime story. Like it could, you know, it's something that could really happen. So, and I also like the ambiguity with Commissioner Montoya. You know, she's the commissioner of police, and you know, she's not supposed to be condoning vigilante stuff, but she has to go to the question to stop this guy because she knows what's going to happen when he goes free. So I really like that story a lot.
It was great. And I love the self-contained nature of it. Like I could, Drew, if they had a short, you know, 5-6 page question backup for Detective Comics, I would eat that up. It's the perfect kind. Literally Detective Comics. I loved that, Drew. That was fantastic. And then the last one, do you know who that character was, Drew?
Nope, I don't.
I didn't think so. I had a feeling. I was like, I don't think Drew's going to get this reference, but this is actually super exciting. So from Morrison's run, when he was on Batman in the mid-2000s, he introduced a character called Simon Hurt or Dr. Hurt. And he was a villain for quite a while, but mainly in Batman RIP, is implied to be potentially an ancestor of Bruce Wayne's. And maybe also the devil. Connections to Barbados, who we've been seeing, has a lot to do with this run. Yeah. It was one of those things, Drew, when I saw him pop up, all of a sudden, all the threads that Ron V has been playing with all came together with him. Like, and honestly, also with Zdarsky. Like, all of the Batman threads came together with him popping up. The last guy to really play around with Zurinar, you know, besides the, like, silliness of the Silver Age, was Morrison, and the villain around that era and who was experimenting with that Zurinar personality was Dr. Hurt. So you've got Zdarsky's run, and then you've also got, you know, his sort of mystical, you know, again, implied on multiple occasions to be the devil and this, you know, this association with Barbados, and you've got Ram V, and it was just like everything all kind of came together.
That's interesting. And then we had the Azrael story, of course, and I noticed it was called The Sword of Batman. Will the original four-part Azrael miniseries back in the early 90s was called The Sword of Azrael? So I took this as the kind of flip of that, plus the reveal that he looks like he's going to be putting on the Azrael Batman suit again. Kind of hinting that Batman is going to be taken out of commission for a while, and he may be replacing him. So that could be interesting. Really interesting issue of Detective Comics.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Drew. It was different than what we've gotten, you know, in terms of length and multiple backups. But there was a lot of really juicy info there, and a lot of really, you know, tantalizing storylines that could be coming out of this. It was exciting because, I mean, there were some good stories just in the comic itself, but also the tease of what could come was really good. Yeah, I really enjoyed reading this comic.
So did I. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman Catwoman, The Gotham War, Scorched Earth Number 1. Scandal orders their new goons to steal the meteor fragments so that they can live forever. If they fail, then don't bother coming back unless you want the opposite of immortality with Vandal Savage's blade. Vandal states that Gotham will soon be ruled by the immortal. Robin Tim Drake heads downtown because of explosions and screams. He tells Oracle it may be more Firefly bombings. When Robin arrives, he's captured by a group of Batman's rogues. Two-Face, Black Mask, Professor Pig, Mad Hatter, Killer Moth, Firefly, and Mad Hatter. Back at one of his micro caves, Batman tells Catwoman and Jason Todd that he believes the meteor fragments have converged in Gotham because he had the largest piece in the Batcave. He had procured it from an archaeological dig years ago to study it. Batman had a theory it was the origin of Ra's al Ghul's Lazarus Pit. Oracle tells Catwoman that Robin Tim Drake is missing. Batman tells the Bat family to save Tim while he goes after Vandal Savage. As Batman leaves the microcave, he tells Jason he is sorry and that one day he hopes he will understand. Batman tracks Vandal Savage to the Gotham Observatory. Batman observes that the fragments are a homing beacon for a larger meteor, but it's too large and it's coming in fast. When it hits, it'll turn Gotham into a crater. The rest of the Bat family battles Batman's rogues at the GCPD, where they have Robin Tim Drake tied to the Bat signal. The signal frees Tim, who joins the fight. Oracle informs Batman that no Justice Leaguers are responding to the emergency. Back at the microcave, Jason Todd takes action by ramming a bat wing into the meteor. The meteor breaks up, but the main piece still hits the observatory, destroying it. Vandal Savage stabs Scandal, wanting the meteor all to himself. Vandal touches the meteor, but states the power is different. Suddenly, there is an earthquake and rocks fall on Vandal Savage. Catwoman is able to rescue Scandal, calling her Marquis when another quake hits. Batman helps up Marquis, but Catwoman slips and falls, disappearing into the rubble. 2 weeks later, Washington and Amanda Waller are at the impact site studying the meteor. Bruce and Dick observe from a distance. It appears the meteor has completely broken down, creating something that appears to be a Lazarus pit in the caves below the observatory. Bruce tells Dick that he is not any kind of an example for the others to follow. From now on, the rest of the Bat family should follow Dick and Barbara because they are the parents that the rest of the family needs, not him and Selina. The Riddler contacts Batman, thanking him for breaking up the League of Thieves. Riddler tries to give him another riddle, but Batman cuts him off, stating he already knows that there are three Jokers. I don't work for you, Nigma. We just had similar goals. Batman looks up and sees a shadow of Catwoman. He chases after her, but doesn't catch her. Instead, he finds a thumb drive with a message on it, in case of emergency. Epilogue. One of Catwoman's former thieves breaks into Bruce Wayne's place to discover that Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Well, Drew, I had about the opposite experience of Detective Comics with this one. There were multiple things I really did not like in this comic. My main question that I have is, Red Hood dead or alive? Because my takeaway was that he was alive, but it was weirdly unspecific in that regard.
I was wondering the same thing also when I read this comic. I was like, did they kill off Jason Todd or not? I don't think so. They may play it off that he's dead, but this was Lazarus Pit stuff. If he dies, he's going to come back. there wasn't really any doubt in my mind.
Well, so, no, Drew, the thing that confused me is the reason I was specifically confused on whether he died is that after Bruce is under the impression that Catwoman has just died, a guy comes up and puts his hand on Bruce's shoulder, and based on the color scheme and the appearance, that looks like that's Jason. I don't know if that's supposed to be like the ghost of Jason comforting Bruce, if that's like Nightwing made a quick costume change. That was, Drew, I was so confused at that panel because Bruce is kneeling at the impact site and a red armband person puts their hand on his shoulder and the only dude that has that is Jason. And the costume looks like what Jason was wearing from the side. And I don't know if that's supposed to literally be him and Bruce is like completely unfazed that Jason didn't actually die in that explosion, or what? It's just not addressed again.
All right, you got me curious now. I just got my tablet. I'm bringing it up right now because I want to see it. All right, I have that panel up. Let me make it bigger. I can't tell whose costume that is.
I'm telling you, man, the most likely answer is that that's Jason.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to go back further to Jason. I want to see what he's wearing. That is Jason. That looks like that's the same outfit he's wearing in the plane, in the Batwing.
You see my confusion, Drew?
Yeah.
And Bruce doesn't bat an eye. He's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So what I don't know is that supposed to actually be Jason just being like, yeah, by the way, I'm 100% alive and fine and totally unfazed by this? Or is that supposed to be like a metaphor and Batman is feeling the weight of both people? Like, I needed some sort of specificity there, Drew, and the comic just let that one hang.
Yeah, I'm paying closer attention. Okay, we see Batman's looking into the pit. There's Marquis laying on the ground. He's saying, I'm sorry, Selina. The hand's there. He looks, the hand's on his shoulder. He looks over, and there's Jason, and then he puts his head down. No explanation whatsoever.
And no reference later of like, man, I can't believe Jason survived that. Or, oh, man, I can't believe they're both gone. Just nothing. To be clear, I don't really care one way or the other what they do. I would have just like that's confusing.
That was confusing. I didn't even notice that was him. I think when I read it, I thought it was Nightwing.
I initially thought it was Nightwing also, and then I was like, I realized it was Red, and I was like, oh, that's Jason. And I thought that they would say something. Like, I wasn't shocked at the idea that Jason would surprisingly survive that, right? Like, that's reasonable. That's not unheard of in comics. So I was like, oh yeah, that jives. And then nobody said anything again. And I was like, wait, what? Everybody, unless I completely misread the scene, they definitely framed that scene as if Jason was flying that plane to his death.
And oh, so, yeah, definitely.
So again, I'm not saying I expected him to stay dead, to be clear, but within the story, I feel like it's reasonable for those characters to assume that Jason is dead in that moment. For that brief period of time, I feel like that's a safe assumption, that they are under the impression that Jason Todd has died. And then Jason just pops in there casually like, hey, sup, man? And no one says anything? Nothing?
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I thought that was Drew. I'm focusing on it because it's an inexplicably confusing scene to have put in, but I also thought it was fairly emblematic of the story itself, which was a lot of things were happening. And there wasn't, I thought, sufficient explanation for a lot of it. It felt like Zdarsky sort of ran out of time and decided story's done now, boys. And that was it. Like, the meteorite thing developed real fast and then turned into something else again without explaining what was really going on. I'm assuming that Zdarsky would tell you that he was teasing things to come, but really, he just leaves things unexplained. And also, Drew, frankly, at every turn, it felt a little lazy because Catwoman dies, but then, nope, she's not dead. She's fine. And then Jason Todd, I think, is supposed to look like he dies and then I think isn't dead. My assumption is that Jason Todd is very much alive and nothing really happened. And that also feels lazy. It also feels like they're just going to kind of move on from the adrenaline problem that was introduced in this story. So, like, ultimately, what did we get out of this story? Vandal Savage is back off the table? Okay. I mean, he's not really on the table for Batman most of the time anyway.
I don't know what the purpose of this was either. Like you said, Vandal Savage is off the table. We got this Lazarus Pit in Gotham now. I don't know if that's going to play in. It's probably going to play into a future story.
Sure, but that's not... A Lazarus Pit in Gotham is not game-changing material, Drew. I mean, that's just... I would almost expect that to be the case.
Yeah, I know it's not a game changer.
It just, it feels, but the thing is that's frustrating, Drew, is it felt like the story was wanting to do something shocking and big, right? Whether it was good or bad, it felt like it wanted to make some major change of some sort. And ultimately, it kind of felt like they chickened out and ended up doing nothing.
Or maybe they were planning on doing something and they were told no. That's always possible, too.
I'm not so sure about that, Drew, because like I said, with the Dr. Hurt reveal in the other comic, it does feel like they're still building towards something intentional.
Now, I wanted to bring up that epilogue scene. We have one of Catwoman's former thieves break into Bruce Wayne's place and discover that Bruce Wayne is Batman. I have a feeling this is going to play out in the future. Maybe Bruce's identity coming out when he's having his Zurin R issues. And maybe this is going to play into the fact that Azrael is redoing the Batman his version of the Batman costume. I don't know. It feels like this might play into that too.
I think that's a fair guess, Drew. Yeah, I don't know. I've had quite enough of people exploring, like, oh, what if Superman revealed his identity? What if Batman did it? What if we just didn't? What if we just accepted that that's a core part of the character and explored other many, many other aspects of the character that you could do stories on?
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you. I do not want Bruce Wayne's identity coming out. Though there's so many people that know it already.
But it's not that interesting of a story, because we all kind of know what would happen, right? Batman, as you know, it would fold. It wouldn't work the same way. The family would have to operate differently. Everything would kind of fall apart, at least for Batman specifically. Like, we know that. Like, there's not that much interesting that you can do with that. Because what's the alternative? What's the surprise? The surprise twist to that, Drew, is that it goes swimmingly. That Bruce, in fact, lives a very happy life with everybody knowing that he's Bruce Wayne. I don't know that anybody's going to enjoy reading that story.
Yeah, probably not. But I'm glad this event's over.
Agreed.
All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Supergirl Special Number 1. Kara is sitting on the roof of a building when Otho-Ra and Ozal-Ra fly up to her wondering what she is doing. They want to know what Krypton was like and what Kara did there. Kara struggles to find an answer, stating she was just a regular kid. The twins fly toward home, stating it's Sunday dinner, and Kara follows. After the dinner, John is surprised that Kara is still there. John comments that Kara is in outer space today, and Kara agrees with him. John shows Kara a Coletary box that his father made for the twins. Kara explains that the twins asked her about Krypton and she had nothing. John asks what she remembers. Kara's mind flashes back to a race she ran in school. She was the fastest in her class. She remembers people yelling, "Go Kara! Go Elsa!" John snaps Kara out of her trance. Kara excuses herself, stating she is tired and should go home. John tells Kara it is okay. We've all had our identity crisis in this house. That night, Kara has a nightmare about the destruction of Argo City. Kara wakes up to find an emergency call from Superman. An explosion in the basement of a high-rise threatens an imminent collapse. A call for help sends Supergirl zooming towards the roof of a building. Power Girl goes zooming past Supergirl, stating she's got this. Kara yells, "Hey!" and grabs Power Girl's ankle and then zooms past her, stating, "She's got this." Power Girl shouts, "Look out!" just as a piece of building is about to hit Supergirl. Supergirl catches it, but continues falling towards the ground. Supergirl blasts it with her heat vision. On the ground, Supergirl looks over to see Power Girl saving a security guard. Suddenly, Kara is back at the race at Argo City. She trips and loses to a girl named Elsa. Supergirl can't seem to win. Power Girl flies over to see if Supergirl is okay. Kara brushes herself off, stating of course she's okay. It's nothing that Power Girl needs to worry about. "I don't need another therapy session. Thanks." Power Girl replies, "Good, I'm not your therapist." Supergirl returns home to find Lois Lane sitting at her kitchen table with cupcakes. Lois thought she seemed a little depressed. Kara explains that when she was a girl, no matter what she did, she was always one step behind. When she tried to go faster, the more she felt behind. When she arrived on Earth after the destruction of Krypton, she was still behind because she failed in her mission to protect Kal-El. He was already Superman. Lois states that Kara arrived just in time to be the thing she needed to be, Supergirl. After Lois leaves, Power Girl comes flying through the window. She asks Kara if she is going to offer her a cupcake. Kara replies, "She can have one of the vanilla ones." Power Girl responds, "Rude." Power Girl tells Kara that after she saved the security guard today, he leaned over and whispered, "Thanks, Supergirl. You're my favorite." Both girls burst out laughing. Kara tells Power Girl that being here doesn't make things easy for either one of them, but it is their destiny, a destiny they both share. Power Girl replies, "For what it's worth, you're my favorite too." Both girls shake hands, and then Kara tells Power Girl not to tell John. Power Girl replies that she would never. The end.
This was a nice read, Drew. I wouldn't describe this comic as a must-read for most people, but if you're a Supergirl fan, it's a nice comic. I mean, there are worse things that you could do. Yeah, I wasn't sure if they were going to try and set something up or make a new status quo. Honestly, Drew, in some ways, it was refreshing that it was really just ended up being an extended Supergirl comic. It was just, telling a nice Supergirl story from start to finish. I enjoyed it. Again, I don't think it's a, I would not describe it necessarily as a must read, but if you enjoy Supergirl and you just want a nice, surprisingly self-contained story, I mean, connected in terms of status quo to the ongoing Super family, but as a story itself, pretty self-contained. Not bad.
Yeah, I like this one shot. I thought it was a feel-good story that kind of buried the hatchet between Supergirl and Power Girl. At least that's what it kind of felt to me.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, yeah, it was an interesting one-shot. Agree with you. It's definitely not a must-read, but, if you're a fan of Supergirl, it's a good read. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Doom Patrol.
What if you could bring three experienced producers into your home each week to discuss your favorite movies and the people that made them? That's Tales from Hollywoodland. Your hosts, Arthur, Julian, and Steve, collectively have years of showbiz producing experience. Their weekly show is a fast-paced, fun, and very conversational experience, like spending a good time with your best movie-loving friends and family. Tales from Hollywoodland is available wherever fine podcasts are found. See you at the movies.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Tony.
Do you like ads about podcasts?
You know it.
How about ads about Doctor Who podcasts?
Even better.
Well, you're in luck, because this is an ad about a Doctor Who podcast.
Wow, I love it.
And you'll love us, the Watchathon of Rassilon, a podcast about Doctor Who.
I'll buy 12.
Actually, it's free.
I'll buy 13 then.
And we're back. Let's talk Doom Patrol, Season 4, Episode 12, Dun Patrol. The Doom Patrol returns from the time stream in the Cloverton Playhouse Theater from where they were sent. Immortus is still floating on the stage while the Butts are trying to get into the theater. Laura turns into a bird and flies away. She returns to Doom Mansion and wakes up Rita. When Laura tells Rita she once again ran away from danger, Rita informs her that she came straight to her to hold herself accountable. Jane realizes she has all the powers of her personalities. Jane attacks Immortus with flaming hands. Keek leaves Larry's body and attacks Immortus also. Cliff tries picking up a row of theater seats and throwing them at Immortus. Cliff's body fails and he falls over helpless. Cyborg creates an energy shield and blocks Immortus's attack on Cliff. Cyborg tries to use a laser sword on Immortus, but she just waves her hand and Cyborg goes flying across the theater into a wall. Jane throws FU ninja stars at Immortus. One of the ninja stars hits the theater doors, knocking them off their hinges. The Butts are able to get inside the theater. The Butts start attacking the Doom Patrol until Dr. Yu and Nicholas come into the theater, singing Shapoopy. The Butts stop attacking and start singing and dancing. Immortus gets mad, stating this is her show, and she begins singing the song from the musical about the Doom Patrol. Soon, everybody is singing along. With both the Butts and Immortus distracted, the Doom Patrol slowly slip out the door. When the Doom Patrol exits the theater, it lights up with colorful magic. Laura comes running up, pushing Rita's wheelchair, stating reinforcements have arrived. The Doom Patrol watch as the theater disappears into the ground, leaving a cloud of smoke. The Doom Patrol celebrate their victory over Immortus and the Butts with dinner and wine together. The doorbell interrupts dinner, and it's Isabel. She has come to thank her besties for introducing her to the Butts. They've written many monologues and songs for her. Isabel has brought them her toenails to eat so they can get their longevity back. Isabel also has a special gift for Cliff for when the time is right. Laura is excited to bring Rita the toenail, but it is too late. Rita has already died. The Doom Patrol decide to go to the afterlife and get her back. When Larry tries to find something that she might be tethered to, he comes across Rita's ghost. Rita's ghost calls one last team meeting and gives her farewell speech. She wants to stay dead and thinks it's best if the Doom Patrol disbands so that each individual can better themselves. For one last assignment, Rita asks the Doom Patrol to burn her body. After that, they all sit down and watch one of Rita's movies, Secret Rendezvous. Rita disappears into the afterlife and reunites with her love. Larry and Keeg go searching for Rama and find him. They discover a way to be together thanks to Keeg. Cyborg returns to Detroit and helps his friend with his robotics class. Jane goes with Casey on a trip into space where she has an opportunity to paint. Laura returns to the ant farm and burns it down. Cliff leaves to go see his grandson. The crystal that Isabel gave him allows him to see his past and Roy's future before he dies.
What a gut punch of an ending, Drew. My God. Whoa. Really good, but man. It's a tough way to have such a... One of my favorite shows I've ever watched to have it go. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, I agree with you. But, man, did it wrap up pretty good.
It did. To be clear, I want our listeners to be clear, I'm not complaining. It was just, it was so effective. It was just such an emotional ending. I mean, whew, successful. They hit the exact note that they wanted to hit.
Yeah, I have to tell you, Cletus, because after I watching it, I had to mull it over for a while. It really wrapped really good, and it was emotional, and it was impactful.
What I think the thing I love the most about the finale, Drew, is that it didn't just give a perfect happy ever after. It gave them it gave each character the ending that they needed, not necessarily the ending that the audience wanted. I think that's what makes it work so well. Because obviously, as audience members, we want Brandon Fraser's character to be cured and happy and living a long time as a grandpa, right? But that's, I don't know, that's not true to what the character was that they gave. Like, that, as much of a gut punch as it is, it's the right ending. And the same thing for all of the other characters. Rita gets to be reunited in the afterlife, you know, and just for all of those, I mean, well, great episode. And I as you would expect for the show, Drew, they were brave enough to do, you know, the thing, you know what I mean? Like, they weren't held back by what they thought the convention for a finale should be.
Yeah, I was real happy with how it wrapped up. And I think it worked out pretty good how they wrapped it up with a mortise in the butts. Yes. Not only was it freaking hilarious, and they didn't spend a lot of time on it. They wrapped it up so they could spend the time wrapping up all the loose ends with the Doom Patrol. I thought they did it well. They wrapped up all the issues we've been seeing through the series for each character, wrapped up. They got the ending they needed. It was just a great ending. One of the best endings I've seen for a superhero show.
Agreed. My only minor nitpick, Drew, and it's not necessarily with this episode, but with the end of the season as a whole, is they oddly left Dorothy unresolved. She's in Mortimus in the musical episode, and then she's gone. That was the only... I was slightly dissatisfied with that, Drew. I would have liked some sort of final goodbye for her.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And to be clear, minor nitpick. I loved the season. I loved the finale. The only, like, half of a percent, right? It's like 99.5%, but that half of a percent, I would have liked something with Dorothy. Obviously, we know that she's still out and about. I would have liked something with her, but that's really the only complaint I can level against it.
Right. But I also have to point out the fact that Dorothy wasn't actually a main character. She was in a lot of episodes, and one of the seasons focused on her a little bit. She wasn't actually a main character. So you can argue that...
I mean, she wasn't a main character in the final two seasons, but she was before that, though. Drew, I agree. I'm not saying that she needed to be a major focus by any means. I just, like, I want to compare... So the last time we see her is in the musical world, right? That's the last time we see that character. And I love that she's in that. I'm not complaining in the slightest. The last thing we get with Niles is sort of a final moment with each of almost everybody except Rita, right? We get to see him have a final moment with all of them, and I would have loved that something, maybe not to the major extent that the Chief got, right? Like, I get Niles getting more, but something, right? Some sort of like, hey, this is what Dorothy's doing now.
Yeah, that would have been nice. I don't think it's the end of the world that
we... No, again, I want to emphasize how minor of a nitpick it is, because this was otherwise, it was great tying back, like, you saw we had already seen the future version of Cyborg's Robotics Club, and then we see him not starting it, but, like, you know, starting the version that we see the future of. I mean, there were so many good things in this episode. And you knew that it was probably not going to be a happy ending when they're talking about Cyborg's sort of robo-tattoos or whatever, the imprints on his metal. And Robot Man makes the comment, like, hey, what do you need that for? We're all still here. And you know that Cyborg knows that they're not all going to be there. Right? Like, it was such a subtle line, but you knew, like, right there, the show was telling you, like, hey, yeah, this isn't, not only is the Doom Patrol going to disband, but it's not going to be a completely happy ending. A bittersweet, but not completely happy ending.
Exactly. All right, well, that wraps our show up for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Well, first off, I just want to say, if for our listeners who have maybe listened to summaries of Doom Patrol, but maybe haven't fully checked out the show, I highly recommend it. It might be the best DC show. That and Watchmen, I think, are one and two for me for DC shows that I've watched personally. Check out the show if you haven't. It's unbelievable. It's hilarious. It's heartfelt. It's well written, well acted. It's got everything you could possibly want in a TV show. But for a comic shout out, we talked a little bit about it from Detective Comics, but Simon Hurt, Dr. Hurt, technically really first appears in Batman number 673. I think he's actually named, like, you actually find out his name in 674, which is part of the Batman RIP storyline. And he's popping up, you know, in and out before he kind of fully comes into focus. Morrison was kind of teasing this guy for a while. But his character, and of course, leave this to Morrison, is based, Drew, on a unnamed scientist who appears in Batman number 156, which came out in 1963. And in that story called Robin Dies at Dawn, Batman participates in an experiment that causes him to hallucinate that Robin dies. And he retires temporarily within that story because he can't handle the thought of Robin dying. And it's a Silver Age story, so obviously things ultimately work out, right? Well, Morrison, being who he is like, hey, guess who one of the scientists on that team was? Of course, Dr. Hurt, Dr. Simon Hurt. So technically, chronologically speaking, he first appeared all the way back in 1963 in the story Robin Dies at Dawn, but really was introduced truly as a character much later during Morrison's run in 2008. And he first pops up in Batman 673, and then is actually named for the first time in 674.
I've actually read Robin Dies at Dawn, I think, more than once. I think I have it in a collection called The Best Batman Stories Ever Told. This is going off my memory, but I've read Robin Dies at Dawn before, so I'm familiar with that story. So that's cool that he came from that character is created from that story.
Yeah.
And I've read Batman Rip before, so when you mentioned Dr. Hurt even earlier in the episode, I'm like, that name sounds familiar. So I can't remember the Batman Rip story up top of my head, but this is because that story came out during the time when I wasn't reading comics. But I'm pretty sure I picked up Batman Rip at some point, the graphic novel or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a pretty big release. That was a big storyline. Morrison's Batman run is one that I definitely recommend people check out because it's definitely got, you know, some Morrison flavor to it. But he's doing a pretty straight up Batman run. And there are some monumental things that he introduces into those stories. Damian obviously being the biggest introduction. what an addition to the Batman lore that has been. But a lot of Batman RIP was a big story, replacing having Batman die during Final Crisis, or appear to die in Final Crisis, and having Dick Grayson be Batman alongside Damian. I highly recommend people check out Morrison's Batman run, because it, again, it's got Morrison flavor to it, but it's not the same level of Morrison weirdness that his Green Lantern run is. It's just a really good Batman run.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about Detective Comics 168 from February 1951. The man behind the Red Hood. I actually read the story over the past week. I actually have it in a collection called Stack Deck, The Greatest Joker Stories Ever Told. It's very golden agey story, but it's called The Man Behind the Red Hood. And what I found interesting in it is this is basically the first memory I have of a Joker origin. So in the story, the Joker was a lab worker until he decided to steal $1 million and retire. So he became the Red Hood. When he finally reached his goal by stealing from the Monarch Playing Card Company, his hood's oxygen tube enabled him to escape by swimming under the surface of a pool of chemical waste. When he got home and he looked in the mirror, he saw that his hair turned green, his lips rouge red, and his skin chalk white. He looked like an evil clown. Realizing his face could terrify people, and because the playing card company made his new face, he decided to name himself after the card with the face of the clown, the Joker. So that's the origin of the Joker we got from this Man Behind the Red Hood story. I reread the story, and I forgot how kind of silly it was, because the story starts off with Batman being a professor and teaching criminology at some university. He's talking about different crimes and stuff, and he brings up the Red Hood because it was unsolved from like 10 years ago. And then, of course, for some reason, it goes on the news that Batman's reopened the Red Hood case, and then the Red Hood appears. And yeah, it's got silly, it's got Golden Age silliness in it, but it's still an interesting story. But yeah, that's my shout out for this week. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-455-8411. Leave us a message, or you can text us, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we've got Birds of Prey, Blue Beetle, Fire and Ice, Welcome to Smallville, Shazam, Poison Ivy, Batman, and the animated movie Justice League War World. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman.
All the world is waiting for you, and the power you possess. In your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.